Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Hello and welcome to the Home Assistant Podcast. My name's Rohan, and as usual, I got Phil. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Rohan. How's it going?
Good. And today we have a special guest, Grant. Hey, Grant.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to my show. This is... Can I intro that?
You absolutely can. I love it.
The Home Assistant Podcast. Welcome, Rohan. Welcome, Phil. I was asking you a thousand questions before we went live, so I guess...
That's right. It's all good. I'll bring some of that stuff back. But this episode is sponsored by Home Assistant Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant, ESP Home, and a bunch of other projects now. Configuration is done by the user interface, so there's no fiddling with router settings, SSL settings, or any YAML.
And today we're also sponsored by ExpressVPN, where you can get an extra 3 months for free. We'll have some more information later in the episode.
Let's start off. You want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. So I'm from South Africa, so hence the strange accent. I am a tech personality, I guess. Yeah, I do a lot of TV work.
Yeah,
I've written for like GQ magazine here and so on. Most of that stuff is consumer facing tech, but on the DL. I've been quite really into Home Assistant and smart home stuff. We recently had a kid. It's 2.5 years ago. she's 2.5 now. And when we moved house, I always wanted to do smart home stuff, you know, like lights and, you know, just I really like the concepts behind a lot of that stuff. I also do a lot of work with Elgato, live streaming guys. So a lot of that stuff is smart. Yeah. So like I was like, got bitten by like fidgeting with smart home esque products. And then when we moved into our house, I was like, I'm going full send on this. So I've got a Synology server at home and I run a Docker version of Home Assistant on it. I know it's not the optimal way to do it because it's not like, what's it, super.
No. Supervisor. Listen, Docker is great until what, like 4 or 5 weeks I used to run it on Docker too, right? And it's
until you have to still hacks.
Even with hacks, it works fantastic. And I actually thought it was a little more performant than my current Yellow install. Oh. However, I like having the dedicated box just for that because it's from work. I do a lot of lab kind of stuff with some of the VMs I run and stuff like that, which I tend to break a lot.
Yeah,
so I just wanted something going that's down. Dedicated off. Yeah. Well, it's because now it's for home. It's now mission critical, right? Because you know my family uses my wife uses it, and if it doesn't work, I get yelled at. So I don't really want to get yelled at. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with the Docker install. I actually love the Docker install. So
I'm still rocking the Docker install and I've got the Home Assistant Green and you know I can see like HAOS, right? But it's a very locked down version. Like there is no me going in and unless I install another add-on, going in and being able to get root access to the hard drive for an obvious reason, right? You know, I want that access. I like to tinker with things. So that still, for me, it's vanilla Docker without the add-on store, but hacks is fine. And I also started on a Synology. The only reason I moved away from a Synology was I just found performance of my NAS getting a bit, you know, I think it's maxed out at 4 gig or 8 gig of memory. I bought the like RAM module upgrade, but I was still finding like just performance issues with the NAS. So
what,
Yeah.
Out of interest, what NAS are you using now?
The NAS, I've still got the Synology NAS. I think it's the 1513, so it's very old. I think that's for 1515, whatever the model number is. But my home assistant is rocking on just an old PC that is an i5, and I just chucked Linux on it and went Docker.
Yeah, like one of the things I've been quite keen to potentially transition to is that you get those little, you know, MSI also bring them out, those little PCs, mini PCs. They're like the PC version of a Mac Mini. And just going like, you know like what, they're pretty powerful. I can, you know, keep them like, and they're quiet. I can keep it in a cupboard somewhere. Yeah. The other problem with like a Synology NAS or a NAS in any way is just they're quite noisy if you've got the wrong drive. Sounds like popcorn.
And they take a lot of power. Like they will use a lot of power.
There's a couple of cool form factors now, right? So what I ended up doing, so I again for the longest time had it like a server, right? Like a proper server or whatever. But again, it got really loud and just a power draw and stuff like that. And I got to the point where I'm like, you know what? I want to actually be a little more efficient with this because at the end of the day, it's costing me money, right? For power and so on. So I actually did, a friend of mine messaged me and I was talking to him like, hey, you know, I want to move away from ESXi, move to Proxmox, to run my VMs. And I want to build something a little more resilient. So instead of having one server with everything on it, maybe a couple of nodes. So I ended up with three nodes with that just, they run Proxmox on it. And then I run a VM on there that on each of those machines so that run Docker on it, right? And I just have a Docker swarm in there. Nothing like Kubernetes or anything excessive. Again, it's for home and it's just so that I can throw stuff up quick. And
that sounds like a nightmare. But
I was going to say nothing excessive, you know, just a couple, just, you know.
Just to create a few VMs and like, if you dig around, you can find the config file. You just got to make sure you've got the right VM open.
you know what? You know what though? It is smooth, right? And it like, once you get it set up and I did it all. And the part where I wanted to learn is I wanted to do this all programmatically. So I ran Ansible. So if you're not familiar with it, that's just, it's like, I describe it. It's a programmatic way of basically you give it a set of instructions. Hey, I want to build this, install these tools, whatever it is, and install Docker, install all that stuff, and go do this. So I have the script, and basically once I had Proxmox on the three servers, I'm just like install, and it just pushed all out, and it worked. I think like the second time, probably not the first time I tried, but I think the second time I tried, I got it. I was like, okay, that's pretty good, right? And so it was a way for me to stay current as well. Again, I'm in the tech field, so I need to understand some of those things too.
Yeah.
But my point is the form factor. the form factor I ended up with is actually it's called micro form factor, right? So it's not like your blocky kind of Intel NUC kind of that piece. It's actually, this one's made by Dell. It's the Optiplex series, but it's one that actually goes, this is just a cover for it, but it's actually this size. It goes in the back of your monitor.
This is the IO plate.
No. It is a whole PC though, right? And it is genuinely this size.
So we call that a very long iPhone sort of for those listening on the podcast.
It looks like a very long.
For those of you listening on audio, it's so think like 1.5 iPhone 12 maxes. I'm just putting it up against my iPhone as well. And that thick as well. So what's cool is this is actually meant for the back of it clips onto the back of a Dell monitor to make an all-in-one PC.
Oh damn, right? That's cool.
So it's thin. So the reason the case is off is because I have a server rack in my basement, whatever, but I just stacked three of these together on top of each other. So I'm like, I should probably give it a little better cooling than what I'm giving it.
I was about to say.
And if you notice, the back is a little curved, so it won't sit nicely, right? So I just stacked them. And I think the body is still a little curved, so I think it like fell off or whatever. But yeah, I was at some point going to 3D print like a shelf system for it.
A server rack.
And then I didn't. So like a rack for my server
like
rack.
A Christmas cracker server rack.
Exactly. I think we've digressed so far from what we were here to talk about. But going back to our original point, Docker, the Docker install, is there's nothing wrong with that, and it is fantastic. I still strongly recommend it, or the green today if I was to do it again from scratch.
And I fell into that because I actually did some work with Synology at the time, and mostly because I film a lot of footage for social media, doing like influencer type work, and we do YouTube like edits and so on. So I was like, cool, it's a great place to dump my footage. That's exactly, that's what I was thinking. And then when I started the smart home stuff, I was like, you know what? I need to integrate everything. Like I need to take smart, like HomeKit and smart things. We're like basically a Samsung household. So I want to take smart things and I want to kind of like mesh all these products together. But what does that? And in my research, I found Home Assistant and it kind of, I don't know how to code. I'm terrible at different languages. So like, it was like, oh no, it got daunting. But the thing is, you put your foot in the like, in the pond, and I'm sure that a lot of people listening to this will relate to this. Put your foot in the pond, and before you know it, you're waist deep, and you're like, "I did this thing," and it's this dopamine hit of like accomplishment. You like you do some of the most like inane things, and you're like, "I spent 3 days like making sure that I could wake on land my PC and switch on all my lights like I was Tony Stark." And then when there was Year of the Voice, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I can actually do this. Like, I can walk into the studio with a cup of coffee and just be like, you know,
100%.
Execute. And then the whole studio goes on.
And then you look at your credit card bill and you're like, oh, okay, that costed me like $4,000. Okay, that's not good.
The fortunate thing is that I'm in the tech scene and it's kind of my job. So it's like we have to dabble. We have to understand how these things work. We have to understand the benefits of those things. But also... 100%. Part of it is like, I come from more of a gaming background. So my wife and I mostly, we used to do a lot of streaming and that kind of thing. But technology is one of those things in South Africa that a lot of people are very technophobic about, like society in general. And I think it's because we live from this legacy of apartheid where like the other was scary or bad, or if it was different. And you'll find that like there was a lot of, like when a cartoon, like The Simpsons would come out and everybody thought The Simpsons was evil. And then a dinosaur, I mean, people thought dinosaurs was evil. That show. Right. So there was a lot of that, like,
because you're so trained to think different equals bad.
Yeah. Suspicious. So it's a very suspicious culture.
I
think as a result of that, like technology, which is new and everyone's excited and I get pumped to dive into it, there's this apprehension as soon as you mention it. And just to give you an idea, like I've got relatives who only got their first email address at 25, you know, and they might which is wild because a lot of them just did not want to go there or touch a phone or whatever the case is. And I know that's not for everybody, and there are going to be some South Africans that are going to pipe up and say, but I think that's just generally the culture. And that's why I think we're behind in many ways, technologically speaking. We're slow to adopt technology and implement it. But at the same time, I was saying off air that like we like to solve problems, and we have a saying called a boer maak 'n plan, which means like a farmer makes a plan, which is just, you know, if there's a problem, we'll fix it no matter what that problem is. And we get together and fix problems as a society in really cool ways. We're very, innovative society. Our banking system is actually really good, in comparison to a lot of international banks I've lived abroad. It's been a miserable experience because I'm so used to a very advanced technological banking system here. But to go back to these systems, which have a lot of legacy technology without the need to innovate, you want to beat your head against the wall. So there is a big subset of South Africans that have adopted Home Assistant and smart home products and APIs to solve problems that we have on a societal level, but also on a home level, which has been really fun.
So what's cool is I actually want to pull this back. So offline we were chatting, and one of the things you told me was because of the load shedding and you know, just electrical grid.
Just so people understand what load shedding is. So load shedding, if you aren't familiar with it, it's basically rolling blackouts. So we have a crumbling electricity providing infrastructure. It's a nationalized infrastructure, which I actually think is a good thing because I've seen the privatized side of that, where you just like it's very expensive, like in general, but like our electricity compared to the rest of the world is a lot cheaper, but it's been mismanaged and there's been a lot of corruption. You know, we come from a corrupt government, with the apartheid government, and those reins were just handed over to a new government. And that corruption continued. There's this whole idea that South Africa, in inverted commas, worked during apartheid, but it only worked for a few. It didn't work for the entire country. And that infrastructure now needs to be expanded to the entire populace, but still have that corruption, those people that are, you know, that wealth that was distributed. And as a result, we've lost a lot of engineers. There's been bad coal that goes to... One of the problems is that coal would be hijacked on the way to, or swapped out on the way to power plants with bad, like impure coal. So it doesn't, you know, destroys the power plants at a much faster rate. So, you know, and then that other coal will be sold off and somebody would make a cut on that system. So there was a lot of that stuff going on.
That still happens.
It still happens. Yeah, it's happening right now. So we're in a position where it was election year. So I think they had to do something quite drastic. And when we moved house, I mean, we were on level 5 load shedding or something, or level 4 load shedding. It changes all the time, which can sometimes be like, you know, 2 to 8 hours of no electricity at all through the day.
2 to 8 hours. What?
Yeah, but it's changed now. And this is actually a weird scenario. So a lot of the private sector, so homes that can afford it, started investing in solar and smart home solutions with solar. Like we've got inverters in their houses. That load has actually alleviated the grid a bit. So it's given them time to do a lot of maintenance. There's been a lot of corruption that's been handled right now. By the government, which has been great actually over the past year, being an election year, you know, people have been held accountable for certain things.
Yeah.
And because they've had that time to do their maintenance, it sounds boring, but it's so important. That maintenance work has kept the grid going. So we actually haven't had load shedding for a good couple of months now, but it's coming. We're going to have it again. Wow. But because South Africans will take those problems in our stride, and this is kind of why I'm proud, like a proud South African in this way, we'll solve that problem. And there's a whole bunch of smart devices that have been brought out to help fix that. So let me talk about our Giza situation this week. I've never been more thankful to have a smart home than this week. So we've got this device. It's called a Plantify Hotbot. It's a device that you stick on, you retrofit your old geyser in your ceiling. It can be any kind of geyser. And it's a box with 4G and connects to Wi-Fi. And it has different sensors. So it's got a moisture sensor that runs into the drip tray. It's got a valve. You can get a valve attachment on it. Basically what it does is it connects to our API, Eskom's API, which is our electricity service provider, who informs us when those load shedding areas are going to happen. And it will make sure, using when load shedding is happening in your area, it will juggle that to make sure the water is hot for when you need it. So you request hot water at 60 degrees Celsius at 5 p.m., but there might be load shedding for 3 hours before. It will kick in earlier to make sure that you do have 60 degrees at that.
And it'll overcompensate for it. It'll make it hotter so that by the time you get it cool to the temperature you want, kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, perfect. So exactly. That's cool. So that's a great solution. And the guy who started that actually is an ex-Google company. You guys might be keen to interview him. But one of the things that device does as well is because it solves that problem. That was the initial reason that it had it. But it also has the moisture sensor in the drip tray. So our geyser burst on Monday, and I didn't know. But as soon as it burst, it shut off the valve automatically and then sent me an SMS on my phone to tell me that the geyser had burst, and then suggested that I contact the plumber. The following morning, I had plumbers there with home insurance that just sorted it out and replaced the entire geyser. Yeah. No water damage. The geyser's basically above this room. If the geyser had burst, there would have been 150 liters of water in this room. But using smart technology, it solves that problem. And the other problem that it solves is on a municipal level. So one of the reasons that's good to install it is that we have substations in each area where load shedding is happening. Right. And geysers are the biggest culprit for when the electricity kicks back on again. That will create a power surge and blow up the substation. And that's a frequent issue here because everyone's geysers right. are off for 3 hours, the water's cold, and that entire neighborhood's geysers switch on at exactly the same time. And they're the biggest power draw.
So a lot of North Americans don't know what a geyser is. So just for reference, that's a water heater.
Yeah,
right? it's like a smaller version of a water heater, essentially, right? And it's,
yes,
I guess it doesn't have to be small, but yeah,
it's like we have 150 yeah. liter water heaters in our proof.
Yeah,
okay, good point.
Decent,
So these devices also talk to each other on their own network, so that they can stagger when they switch on after load shedding's happened. So like 20 seconds, 40 seconds, two minutes. So even though power's gone on, the neighborhood slowly goes on. So it saves that substation from blowing up, which could leave you without electricity for like 2 weeks until they fix it, you know? So smart devices really do solve a lot of those problems. And Home Assistant is just such a integral part of it because you can tap into a lot of these smart devices in a way that like no other platform allows you to do. I can't believe Home Assistant is free. Like I can't believe I actually right? got the Nabucasa sub because I was like, I feel bad. Like I feel bad. It's just so good.
You're getting such good value yeah. free, right? Like you need yeah. to, right? yeah, it shouldn't be free.
And yeah, it shouldn't be free. It's just been great. I've done a few things actually this week, which has been great. I bought a shout out to, Loop Photo on Instagram. He's a good friend of mine. He's a fashion photographer. He also we nerd out about smart home stuff, and we both got smart locks. Somebody was selling them on Facebook Marketplace. Didn't know what the value of them were, and selling them at 10% of their actual value. So they're nice. Definitely wow. not watching this podcast. These August smart locks.
Yeah.
And then I find out that they eventually stopped serving our region. So I thought maybe that's why he dropped them in price. But through some trial and error, I got like an ESP32 generic device, right? Just bought one of those for like 300 Rand, which is like, I don't know, $20. And now controlling both of those because it uses Bluetooth through that. And I couldn't believe how easy it was to set up. Just, I can't believe people made that for nothing. Like those developers are mad. Like you guys, yeah, thank you. And that's solved. Like I don't even use the legitimate like dongle that comes with the product because it's so crap in comparison to what the Home Assistant is doing, even on a hardware level. It's amazing. So that's securing our home now. So like using Home Assistant to secure like entrances in our home just is bonkers. Yeah.
So that's using the Bluetooth extension from Home Assistant, not...
Yeah, so for those of you, because sometimes I also listen to this podcast and I'm not on the same page. So the ESP32 generic devices can be plugged in to a PC and literally like... I want to use a cool word for this, like transformed by like into a function. So it's a little computer with no purpose, and then you just go to the browser, the Home Assistant, the ESP Home website, and you can choose its function. And it's got Bluetooth, it's got Wi-Fi, it's got like HDMI. I don't know if it's got HDMI on, but it's got a whole bunch of different things on it, and it will transform that physical device into the device that you need, which is wild. That's like the future of everything. Can you imagine all these little generic things that can like be transformed into something? And because a lot of the smart home fail safes for locks are Bluetooth, like because you've got to be in the region, it's convenient, right? Right. Like you're at home, you can do it, but you can't do it remotely off site with Nabucasa or whatever. So what I did was we got one of those, and now our smart locks are all connected to one of those USB 32 generic devices, and it's now a Bluetooth transmitter, and it literally is detected by Home Assistant, automatically detected in Home Assistant, no coding, and bonkers. Yeah. And I'm able to just like, it was so, I was shocked at how quick and easy it was. I was going to be like, I'm going to be here for a week doing some YAML, and I hate it.
Yeah.
Like I'm not great with code. And then I was like, this just works. Like it's wild.
Yeah.
ESP Home and the Bluetooth proxy are like some of the unsung heroes, like of home. Well, they're not unsung, but totally. Like it's just
they are unsung crazy. Because people don't know how. I think it's a daunting step again. You know, like you're waist deep. You've learned a little bit of YAML. Like a lot of people won't even touch Home Assistant because like just to install it on a Docker or run it as an operating system is already like a huge technological hurdle. And I'm also talking from South Africans who are technophobic, but also like.
Sure.
I think it's you're used to having a device that does everything for you, and you go like, I just want it to work in like you know smart things. Why can't this all just work in smart things? And then you start doing these things that seem insurmountable at the time. Like you're like, oh okay, now I've got to install the dock. Oh okay, that wasn't so bad. And then like to then translate that, now you've just got to grips with software. Now to translate that into like, oh wait, I can buy hardware, but I've got to invest in that hardware and get it shipped. And I'm not sure how easy it's going to work. It was wild how easy that was going to work. And it was because Prey and vouched for it. He was like, I've done that at my house. Don't worry. He actually sent me a link to a local Disty, like a Raspberry Pi like manufacturer. And they had like one of those generic devices. I was like, this thing's so cheap. And I was like, okay, cool. It's worth trying. If it doesn't work, it's so cheap. Like whatever. And sure as Bob, it was mind blowing. And I think if you are hesitant to get into the hardware space with Home Assistant, don't be. If you've experienced how cool Home Assistant is and how easy it, and also how easy it's becoming, I think the developers are making it so much more accessible than it's ever been. You will,
yeah.
That accessibility translates over to these devices as well. So I'm really excited to like start dabbling in some physical stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was great. And now our whole house can be locked like remotely. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So
it's so funny because no matter how much tech you play with and all of that stuff, it's still like there's still some allure to like, oh man, I turned on my light with a phone or like something like that, right? Or like, hey, I locked my house like remotely.
Even better. So we like a Samsung household. So all our devices are Samsung. So I expose the entities to smart things, right? Or using the Home Assistant apps, which is great. So there's two ways we can unlock our front door. So the first way on Android, I'm not sure if this is like an Android thing, but you get like, if you swipe down on the app tray, you get a whole bunch of icons on Samsung devices. Mm-hmm. And these icons and shortcuts can be these tiles, right? That can be customized by Home Assistant. So you can have entities on your swipe down. So this is, I don't see a lot of people talking about this. I can open up a front gate. I can open up a front door and a garage door just by swiping down from the time menu.
And it's basically just a little widget in there that you just click on.
Yeah. It's part of where your mute settings or your torch is or whatever. You can just put that entity there because you need that entity to be accessible wherever. So you're going for a run, which also leads me to like, I go for runs with my headphones and my smartwatch and I just, you know, Home Assistant runs on my smartwatch as well. And I've got a tile with the front gate. So I don't take my keys, which again, in South Africa, running with your phone is a massive security risk. So I wouldn't run. I would have to get a gym membership where I'd keep my phone with me. I wouldn't listen to music, you know, keep it. But now I can download a playlist. People don't really steal smartwatches because there's like there's a barrier to entry. You know, you need the charger and, you know, the value is not worth it. It's just like, they're also relatively inexpensive in comparison to a phone. So I'll run directly with Spotify playing on my watch. And as I get home, I'm able to swipe to that tile to open up and unlock my house and open the front door, front gate with just my freaking watch, which is insane.
it really is. If you think about it, right. That is 2024, folks.
But this is the thing with Home Assistant that's so exciting because it solves problems for me. And like in South Africa, it's a big deal to run with your smartphone. It's not wise because there is a lot of crime. We're one of the highest crime rates in the world. And because of that, you just kind of want to minimize risks, you know. There's no reason for... And also, it's the phones are bulky. It sucks to have a strap around you with a phone. You want to kind of just go. Right. And being able to like control a whole bunch of like devices from your watch and just like including getting into the house and not having to take keys is awesome. And I've taken that a step further. So for my wife and I, we've got the Samsung smart tags and they are notorious for being kind of locked into the Samsung smart things ecosystem. You're not really allowed to to use them. But there is an advanced user mode for your SmartThings on online. So you can create virtual entities in SmartThings on their landing page.
Right.
So like you log in with your account. So I would so in order to unlock the front door using a smart tag, I created a virtual switch and a like a an if this then that scene where if I if I hold the button down for like 2 seconds, it will trigger the virtual switch. And if that virtual switch is triggered, then on Home Assistant, because Home Assistant can see that virtual switch, because remember I put the integrated right. smart things.
If that virtual
switch moves, then I can unlock the door. Then that that door August entity will unlock. So you can use those smart tags to just open, unlock, and unlock your door. That's and then cool. if you create scenes, you can go like my route from the garage to the house, which is all got smart locks now.
Yeah,
I can just hold that down and everything just like open sesame. So if you've got shopping or a baby, which we do, like my wife is carrying our toddler, like, I've solved that problem for us. It's...
Wow. So I need to break this these things down a bit. So you've got the Samsung smart tags. So are you saying that they can detect which door you're coming in from? Like if you're at the front door, it knows that you're at the front door or...
Well, not traditionally, not in Samsung. So like Samsung SmartThings kind of locks down those tags. So you can't really interact with any other entities other than Samsung entities. So I've created a virtual Samsung entity, a virtual SmartThings switch on an advanced backend. So a lot of people don't know this, but if you there is an advanced backend online on your browser, if you sign into your Samsung account, just search it. And you can create virtual like entities that SmartThings can engage with. But because there is SmartThings integration for Home Assistant, it'll pull those virtual entities in. It won't touch your smart tag. It can't do anything with your smart tag because Samsung have locked it down. But because I could get that smart tag to interact with that virtual the SmartThings switch, right. I can trigger events like if that switch is in a certain state, then the door's unlocked. If that switch is in another state, then I can lock the door. So that's how I get it to talk. And it's one of those ways where like the developers have thought of everything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they've thought of the route. Like, and like, it was a solution that I was like, I nearly bumped my head. I was fortunate to go to the launch for the S24 Ultra in the States for work.
Yeah.
And they gave us a bunch of smart tags and I was like, oh, awesome. Like we got some smart tags as like a press kit. And I was like, I can't get this to work with my stuff. And then I was like, somebody on GitHub worked it out, man. Somebody worked that thing out. And I was like, you guys are the best. I freak out. I go like, somebody out there, and people do it for free. And this community is so awesome because of that. Like it really is.
Yeah.
And now my family is secure. Like we leave the house. Again, it's a security thing. Using Nabucasa, I can lock, if I forget the house is locked, I can just check the state of the home, whether it's locked from these tiles or use the button to do it. If you press the button once, it locks the doors. And if you hold it down, it unlocks the doors. So that way, like if a toddler's playing with it, the fail safe is that it can, you know, trigger. But also you can have other, other exceptions, like, you know, you have to be within your phone has to be within the realm of the house or whatever the case is, you know, geofenced it and whatever. You can do that stuff. But like, I also want to have the luxury of going, hey, there's a parcel at the door. I don't like the idea of, those little cubbies where people put, sitting in South Africa. That's not happening in South Africa. You'll never leave a parcel in front of your door in South Africa. It will be gone within 10 minutes. So I use our Ring doorbell. I watch the gate open. I use, like a Toya integration to open up the front gate on Home Assistant. Yep. I'll watch them come in. They'll put the box down. I'll watch where they put it. And then I close and I lock the house. Like from my phone, which is awesome.
That is cool.
Like those are solutions. Like, you know, the solution in the States is to Canada is just to leave your parcel at the front door because you don't have to often solve that problem. That's not a problem that a lot of people
have. Depending on where you are, yes, but yeah, totally agreed.
I mean, it's so pervasive. The idea is so pervasive that the distributors, Amazon, will leave your parcel at the front door, which is like our local delivery services will never do that. That's just never happening. They'll like the delivery person will get into trouble because that is asking for crime to happen, you know. So you need to mitigate that somehow. And I want to have that experience of like, I don't have to be home when a parcel comes, or if we've got a cleaner around, right? Like, I don't want to have to be at home. I can just let people in and out the house remotely and watch them on our cameras, which is awesome.
Stick around. We'll be back with Grant after these short messages. Going online without ExpressVPN is like driving a car without insurance. You might be a great driver, but with all the crazy people on the road these days, why do you need to take that risk? Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, you're a technical person. But it doesn't take much technical knowledge to hack someone. Just some cheap hardware and a smart 12-year-old could probably do it. ExpressVPN is a super secure VPN that would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. It's easy to use, just fire up an app, one button, and you're protected. I use ExpressVPN all the time to protect my online security from avoiding advertising trackers and being able to easily geolocate myself around for testing websites or getting around ad blockers. ExpressVPN makes it easy. As someone that advocates for privacy online, I love how easy ExpressVPN is easy to use and can work across a multitude of devices. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/homeassistant. That's expressvpn.com/homeassistant, and you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/homeassistant.
We want to give a shout out to our sponsor this week, HelloFresh. We started looking at HelloFresh because my wife and I have been wanting to cook more using fresh ingredients and something inspired by fall. HelloFresh also provides pre-portioned ingredients delivered directly to our door, including proteins, veggies, sauces, and all the spices we need, along with the recipes to make the meal. I'm looking forward to my HelloFresh box so I can start trying new, well-balanced meals instead of us wondering what's for dinner and ending up eating something unhealthy. With the guided recipes, it also helps me start dinner early so I can better help out my family. Get 10 free meals at HelloFresh.com/freehomeassistant. Applied across 7 boxes, new subscribers only, varies by plan. That's 10 free HelloFresh meals just by going to HelloFresh.com/freehomeassistant.
I don't think even think we really got past the how you got started with Home Assistant. I want to delve into that a little bit more. So when, like, how long is it? So were you, because I know you mentioned that you're not big on YAML or anything like that. So were you in, did you start Home Assistant when we had started to move away from YAML and you were able to create automations from the interface, or were you actually going into YAML and creating automations that way?
So at first, my impetus to move to Home Assistant was I had a bunch of smart, like cheap smart devices, right? Like, I didn't want to go Philips Hue or whatever the case is, like, and get into an ecosystem. Those things are just really expensive in South Africa. But there are like a lot of Xiaomi products or Toya rebranded products here that are relatively inexpensive, you know? So you can like, it gives you the opportunity to dabble. But my problem was that there might not be a HomeKit or a SmartThings Connect, you know, you buy the product and you'd search it as a partner company or like Google Home, and you'd be like, shibbit, like, I can't use this thing anymore. Like, I bought this fancy thing, but I got to go to a folder of apps. And I was like, that sucks. And especially for my wife, you know, my wife is on the spectrum, so it's difficult to adopt all these new things as they're happening. It's just got to work. Like, if it doesn't work, like, I'm in the dog box in more ways than one. It's not just like, it's because because being on the spectrum, everything needs to, the expected outcome needs to happen.
Right.
So I like, I can't make sure the door unlocks and it doesn't unlock, you know, she'll tear her hair out. So I was like, okay, so what solutions can I get with this? It's like, either I sell all this gear and I just get into an ecosystem, and then I just stumbled across Home Assistant. And again, it was like getting your feet wet. I was like, I looked at it, and then I created the Docker install, and then I got that splash page. Still back in there, it was a couple of years ago, and I was like, this is too daunting. I don't know. I don't feel comfortable with this.
Yeah.
Then I like integrated like one or two things. I integrated the Elgato stuff, and I was like, oh, that's quite cool. And then I was like, oh, if that wasn't as hard as I expected it to be. And then you integrate like smart things and you go like, okay, cool. Some of the smart things are working. That's pretty sick. Yeah. Xiaomi struggles, like, you know, they've worked out a plan. great. Like, you're like, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And I was like, okay, great. So this stuff is all like in here. And before you know it, you're like, okay, cool. I'm going to do some YAML. And then I got stuck. And I actually started using Gemini to do YAML for me. So I started going, it's one of those things. I would tell Gemini what I want the outcome to be, because I faced an issue where I can't use a scene to trigger an event. So you can't use a change of scene to trigger, which there must be a logical reason, but like I was beating my head against this. I was like, why can't I do that? And then I was just, okay, let me just ask AI. Let me tell them what my desired situation is. And it spat out some YAML and I just changed some entity names, and lo and behold, it worked. And it just, like, I didn't have to do the drop down to go, scene wasn't there. It had given me the YAML to use the scene as a trigger. I needed the scene to trigger my wallpapers change on our PCs because I use Wallpaper Engine. So because we shoot a lot of stuff for Elgato, in our studio, like, you know, you want to show off how awesome the kit is, right? So you want to change all the lights, and there's a great Home Assistant plugin for Stream Deck, like an incredible one.
Yeah.
And for those of you listening who don't know what the Elgato Stream, it is bonkers. And we've just launched, this is not an ad. I work at Elgato, and I was part of this because also I was like drilling them hard. Like Julian, our CEO, has all these awesome Apple products, but there wasn't like great Android stuff. They've just launched the Android Stream Deck. It's free, 6 buttons, and then there's a lifetime sub, so you can use any Android device as a Stream Deck.
Cool.
And I was like, finally, like, because, like, you know, everybody, we don't have Apple products yet, so I was like,
sure.
Not using it. I build dashboards in Home Assistant to do these things. You know, that's how I control all the stuff. So I was like, finally. But so what I was doing was I was building like a button in on Stream Deck that would then like change a theme. I can do it quite quickly, actually, on the setup here behind me. So it's my wife's setup. So just there's a whole bunch of different brands behind me. Sorry for those of you who are listening.
Yeah, so we've got like a whole bunch of lights. We've got some key lights.
Yeah, so it's like it's a gaming setup, a typical gaming setup. And then it's blue, and I can press a button and change the scene to whatever I want. This is a Home Assistant dashboard that I've built, and we can individually change the lights. And we, to increase our productivity, because we have to film for TikTok and so on, we need the set that we're working in to have consistent lighting. So I have different scenes built on that. So I would I built like different scenes, and I needed the like MQTT to speak to each of the PCs to change the wallpaper.
Right.
Again, I started this huge rabbit hole. And just so that one button press would change all the lights in the setup, from the computer lights to the desktop background to, you know, it got excessive. No one's, I think very few people are bothering to do that because it's not a functional thing. But it's for work, to me, it was important. I wanted it's impressive to witness. And wake on LAN integration and so on. And Home Assistant is the only way they can do that really well. So you can build this amazing scene with YAML that makes sure that like there's MQTT that's like sending packets to the different machine with like hotkeys. So listening for hotkeys so you can change your wallpapers to match an aesthetic. Right. And take note, if you're a club, I've got a friend who's a club owner in Cape Town, and they do a very similar thing in their club because he controls the whole club through his iPad. So there are lights all the way around the club, and he walks around with basically Home Assistant on his iPad, and throughout the night is like basically vision mixing the environment using Home Assistant, which is awesome. So there's so many use cases for this that aren't just like your house. Those scenes and those complicated multi actions, which we do have in Elgato Stream Deck, but building those scenes, it's instantaneous on Home Assistant. So with the plugin, you can create quite an intricate stage like controller for your whole house, which is awesome. And so I kind of rely a lot on Home Assistant to do a lot of the intricate work on it, as opposed to other plugins that other people would have built. Because I think Home Assistant is actually the stronger of the two because we've got access to the back end, right?
Right, right.
And before anybody tells me that like, oh yeah, it's complicated, like, you know, like I have to learn all this stuff. There's a new generation of kids that are growing up now that are learning languages at school, mandatory learning languages at school on how to interface with computers. And this stuff is going to be second nature to our kids. We're all fathers. We've got kids. It's going to be second nature to them to talk and interface with a computer using their language. Whereas for us, we had to, you know, beat it and learn it. You know,
even through the ages, it's become easier too, right? You started with assembly and then C and then like whatever, right? Now it's like,
yeah, and even YAML. Like I was talking to some mates of mine who are developers yesterday, and having like they're doing like more complex Python, you know, for security companies, and they're like, YAML, look, what exactly is it? Like, because that's not really on their radar. And I go, oh, it's a config file that you can just edit, and it's so simple. They just looked at it like, oh, okay, cool, got you.
Yeah.
Like, so YAML is actually not as it's like. We learned a little bit of JavaScript at school, and I just remember JavaScript was pretty simple, like in a sense.
Sure.
And it's like that, like if there's a logical outcome, and that's why AI can build it for you, because it's not complicated. Like it's not like I wouldn't use AI to build like complex code. Like I know, you know, the GitHub Copilot stuff can do a lot of that stuff, but you have to check it out. You have to treat AI like it was like a 13-year-old intern who's like giving you the work that you briefed them on, right? So they rock up with the code and you go like, let me just check this quick, one sec. You're gonna have to change a few things. But YAML is so chilled, like you can get it to spit out some YAML and learn from what the YAML it gives you and go like, oh, that's what it's triggering. Oh, that's an entity syntax, you know. Oh, and then just change a few things based on like the devices that you've integrated, and then just, you know, like copy paste it into the config file and save. And then you're like, oh, this works. And now, even now, you're right. Like it's getting easier in Home Assistant because you can have direct access to the YAML in the dashboard, which is so cool. It's like a car where you could just open the hood of the car and just get inside if you're a mechanic. But if you don't want to do it, you can just keep the lid down and call a friend, you know.
That's
but if you want to, but you can. You know, it's not a test.
Advanced mode. So do you talked about your Stream Deck and stuff. So do you drive a lot of stuff? I mean, even I know you talked about the lighting and stuff like that. Do you drive other stuff off of there too, or that's connected back to Home Assistant? Or
I do, it's mostly lights, but I operate our air conditioners. So we've got a smart air conditioner in the studio over here, which is awesome, the Samsung one. So because SmartThings integrates with Home Assistant, I can expose Home Assistant to the Stream Deck, and you can do things. I haven't actually even done it yet, because with the Stream Deck Plus, you could dial. So you could technically, if you cared enough, you could turn the heat up and down with a dial, which is pretty sick. The Stream Deck Plus has got like a touchscreen which you can scroll, so you can have pages. So I've got a smart home page. So like I'll be working, I'll have like a, just, you know, opening regular apps and just my chill day, like startup time, whatever. But then I'll swipe to get to my Home Assistant controls while I'm working on my Stream Deck. So I can just like tweak the temperature of the room or change the lights if they're too bright. Like maybe I forgot to like switch them off. And I know that Elgato got like other controls, like a control center on your desktop. But like while you're working, you don't want to like swap out to go to something else. I've got that control like right in front of me, which is awesome.
Cool.
So I do control it like that. And then we've got, in inverted commas, dumb air conditioners in the other rooms. Yep. And I've got Xiaomi IR Blaster like speakers. So that was also revolutionary that you can like transform older technology that that's using older technology into smart technology, which saves you further money and also is great. So for those, and also give them smart functionalities. For example, when we moved in summer, and summer can get to like 40 degrees Celsius in South Africa.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know what that is in American Fahrenheit. But we had a newborn baby and like that room was like piping hot. The ventilation was bad. So we put an aircon in, but we put like a stock standard aircon. But when we got the Xiaomi ones, but you had to go in there and switch it off. Beep, 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 beep. The Xiaomi speakers that are IR blasters, we were able to run that as a white noise machine because it costs the same amount of money as a white noise machine.
Right.
And then you can create virtual remote controls on that device blast IR. So I just made a virtual aircon controller, so it's always on in that room, and I'm able to not like go in there and switch it off. I can manually switch it off like from the lounge, but also I can set timers and stuff which aren't native to the device because the device doesn't have any of that technology in it. But I can, through Home Assistant, once I've integrated that virtual switch or that virtual remote, I can go like after 10 minutes, just switch this thing off. I can set up scenes that do that, which is again, like, it's not just a quality of life thing. It's like game changing if you've got a newborn kid, because you don't want to fall asleep because you probably like had like 2 hours sleep the night before, fall asleep and the aircon ran all night.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
When it only had to be on for 2 hours, you know, and then you just save so much money.
Doing things like preconditioning the house, you know, like if you're on your way home and it's hot in the house, like, you know, using the proximity sensors, right? Turn the aircon on. So by the time you get home, the house is cool, right? Not walking into a hot
And even
box,
even just like, even the proximity stuff is rad, but even just doing it manually. Like we had an instance recently where, like I spoke earlier about that hotbot that was attached to the Plentify hotbot that's attached to our geezer. There's a vacation mode, right? So you can switch on the vacation mode remotely with your phone. You can duck out to on holiday or whatever the case is. And then you've pre-selected when that vacation mode is going to end. So when you arrive home, there's hot water. So like nothing has changed since you've left.
Yep.
But so traditionally, like those geezer timers are all manual. You've got to like get home and then, oh, do we switch on the geezer? And you put your bags down. But then you've got to wait for the water. What do Americans call it?
Water heater.
Water heater.
The hot water service,
or the hot water tank.
You wait for that water heater to heat up. You know that can take like 2 hours, but like now you want to shower. You might have come from a 9 hour flight.
Yeah,
you know we're in Africa, so if we're going anywhere, it's a 9 hour flight.
So
it's just such a mission. But now with just those quality of life things, and again, like having a family that's more on the spectrum, like those inconveniences stack. Like the inconvenience of having to like bath your child, but there's no hot water is like, actually it can be a very toppling thing. Like, I don't know if you heard about autistic burnout, but like a lot of people with autism, when they're overwhelmed and things like that can actually trigger being overwhelmed. It can take a week to come out of that burnout mode. And like the more convenient and better I make the house, it's an accessibility thing for my wife. And potentially our daughter, who might be on the spectrum. But then also for me, it's a great way to tinker. I've got ADHD, so it's a great way for me to tinker and solve all these problems.
Yeah.
But it's to me, it's more than just building a cool house. And I think a lot of people start with that. But when we started realizing that it's an accessibility thing, making sure there's hot water at the right time, making sure that we can switch our alarm on remotely if we're not at the house, like if we forgot to do it, because that's security is a big deal. So like you go away on holiday and you panic because you didn't switch the keypad on the wall. Like who does that? Like that's like the vast majority of people. We've got a smart alarm system. So we're able to like do that offsite. Right. And also switch the alarm off for our neighbors if it's going off because the wind blew a plastic bag around the garden or something. Sure. We can switch it off for our neighbors because it's like, I guess that alarm's going to go off and destroy our battery and annoy our neighbors for the next 3 days.
Yeah.
Unless somebody switches it off. Yeah. So we've got to get like a neighbor with a spare key to come around. And like those things really like affect our family and the mental health of our family. So to tackle those pain points so that I can be in control of making sure that the house is the most accessible, the smoothest experience that you can get, not have 50 apps on your phone, have one app that you interface with. And that is Home Assistant and a one dashboard that I have given her access to that makes the household better. And when Home Assistant improves, and it's improving like nearly daily at this point, like when Home Assistant improves, it's wild what people are doing. Even the integrations, alarm system is called an Olam system. And it's a South African, as far as I know, it's a South African system. And the most important part of it is that it's not just like a Ring alarm system that just blasts an alarm to your neighbors. It sends radio signals to your private security, which come to your house, right? So that's a big deal. You need that to happen. So what it does is retrofits your existing alarm with all your existing sensors that work with the radio thing, retrofits that so that you can interface with that motherboard that's in the, it's like a dongle that connects to that motherboard, which is awesome. And that system, I needed to integrate into Home Assistant. Someone's already built an integration. Some South African guy has already built an integration and he's already uploading new updates. I'm waiting for an update now to fix something. You know, just show you how powerful the Home Assistant community is and how on it. So when I say things are changing daily, that's what I mean. Like, it's like, you never know when that update's coming. Like, and when Jamie, our daughter, is older, like, we're going to give her access to that. Like, we're going to give her access to, the more we grow and the quicker you adopt Home Assistant and the more you grow with it, the better you understand it, the more you can hand it over to the family and the more literate the people around you will become of it. Because you are people listening to this podcast are most likely the managers of their homes when it comes to that stuff. You know, that's why we're here, right? That's why I started listening to the podcast, just to be inspired by how other people use the stuff. And that's the main reason we use it. It's not necessarily to be cool. We do some cool stuff like changing lights in the background and whatever of our shots. But the primary reason is to make our household better and safer. And it's got to be easy to use because the family is using it. And in South Africa, we've got a lot of problems that technology is solving like that. And Home Assistant is, whether they knew it or not, has stepped into that space. And it's given developers here a platform to help with rolling blackouts, to help solve security problems, help integrate security cameras into a one dashboard and one hub so that we don't have to spend millions of rand like building our houses into these secure, safe places for our family.
I mean, and with the other side of it, to your point, right, especially with living with autism or any other kind of mental health issues, there's also that piece of consistency too, right? It's like, hey, every single time this thing happens in this sequence. So it's, and I will caveat that there's sometimes when it doesn't work, right? But let's call it 95 out of 100 times it works, right? Then that's that much less chances of being inconsistent and potentially causing, to your point, burnout or any of those kind of issues, right? That may arise.
And there are systems that I've developed that help mitigate point of failure. And one of them is I keep some products as test bench products, or like I have a test bench dashboard, which I will fidget with, and I won't introduce my wife to those things that I'm doing there. But when I've got something to work, like the front door, and I can integrate that into her phone, I can go ahead and do that. You know, right? Like that works. And and also you do like tier priorities. Like there's like security tier must always work. Hot water must always work. Those are like tiers of importance. And then there's like other ones which are you know, whether the lights go on in one room or not, or they change color, whatever. Those things are irrelevant to the health and safety of our family. So like those products you can fidget with a little bit. But you know, we've got a smart vacuum, you know, those like Xiaomi robot vacuums that go around the house. And I've integrated that into Home Assistant. So I use my Stream Deck to switch it on. And I've got like, you can switch it on to clean different rooms.
Yeah.
So like that, like, and I expose that for my wife, and she's able then to go like, you know what, like, I just want Jamie's room clean now because, you know, we forgot to do it earlier. She just presses a button on her Stream Deck and boom, that, you know, the vacuum cleaner is going to clean and vacuum that room for the next like 20 minutes. Those things are valuable. You know, those are the health improvements that I mean. And those things are consistent. But like, you know, obviously more complex things I keep on that test bench, and, you know, but once I've figured it out, then I'll just transfer that integration or that scene over through to her dashboard. You know, so she's got access to like a cool way of doing it, or a new system of doing something.
So what is that? What is that introduction of that newer element in the dashboard or something like that? What does that look like? So, and the reason I ask is because you're probably not the only person that's doing this, that's going through this, right? Where you have to kind of stage it or whatever that looks like, right? And
I have so this is the dashboard. Look, my biggest gripe with Home Assistant is how bad the graphic design just generally is. I come from a design background, so it's like it's very functional, right? But then you go like, that doesn't look pretty, you know. So like smart home stuff often doesn't look pretty, and you don't want to interface with it. So I've spent a lot of time in this is our dashboard right now, but like I spent a lot of time making the stuff look aesthetic using Mushroom. I just switched up one of her lights, which is cool. And then what I've done is I've done a single dash with different titles for each of the different rooms or different things. So my setup, her setup, these are just the Elgato lights that we, so she can just go to that title header, scroll down to that title header, and then interface with it like that. And then I will generally, if there's, here's the aircon, so on. Like if there's something that like she might need access to that like that's not very like frequently, I won't bother. That's at the bottom of that dashboard. And then so then I'll go into Home Assistant and add it under another title, or add it to a room under title. It's the best way to do it is obviously add different dashboards for different rooms. Yeah. But I find that like that's also like it's a little bit like confusing because most people don't have a billion smart home products in the house. So having one dashboard with different titles for each room, I find it to be a little bit more useful. Even with smart things and the Xiaomi home stuff, like it sucks. They all have that whole idea of like having different spaces. So you'll be interfacing with something, but like just because it's not next to me, it just happens to be in another room, but I need like, you know, like just put it on the same space. They have the favorites dashboard. That's usually like what all these other ones do. But again, it's not ideal, right? You kind of want to customize a dashboard with household stuff. And then also, just on a side note, with one amazing thing with Android is if you swipe down, you get device control, right? And you can choose your service. So you can do smart things like Google Home or whatever. You could also choose Home Assistant. So you can...
Yeah.
I don't know if you know about, the listeners might not know about this, but like that is awesome. So that's where that dashboard lives. So if you swipe down and you just press device control, it'll bring up that Home Assistant dashboard for you.
Nice.
And then she can interface with it directly from there. So again, it's about how fast can we get to these things and the things that work with the least amount of like headroom. And if I did that dashboard like that, right? And if there was, and again, she had to sift through different rooms. Like it would just be a huge headache.
So I'm interested to know, like, so you've got your wife who's on the spectrum, how you've gone about, and I know you mentioned before, you've got the tiers of your, you know, what needs to work, right? Mission critical stuff, locks need to always work. How have you gone around doing things like contingency and redundancy to make sure that, you know, what if Home Assistant is down? Like what happens in those situations? Like,
well, fortunately, we've retrofitted a lot of our things. So smart locks have keys. So that's, and I know a lot of the community are going, oh, roll your head. It actually, it's great that we can rely on those things. You can hide a key on the property. Sorry, daughter's crying. You can hide a key on the property, or you can use a radio remote to open up the front gate or whatever the case is. You know, so we still have that technology. It's just harder to access. So it's a little bit of a pain to use to carry this massive key. Like, I use my watch to open the front gate. That's my only way of interfacing with my front gate.
Yes.
So we still keep the retrofitted stuff because I do think it's necessary right now to do that. The smart home, you need a fallback on, and like a physical key, fine, it works. It's worked for hundreds of years. Yeah. So like that's how I've mitigated that redundancy. And it's also what she's familiar with, right? So you give her this extra layer of something, but if she doesn't want to adopt it for whatever reason, she can go back to like the traditional way of interfacing with it. But more often than not, she doesn't. She'll use the new thing, like the smart things, the smart tag and stuff.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
And when designing or even like considering, you know, what's going to go into your smart home next, are there any special things that you have to consider for the other people in your home? Like, oh, I can't use this sort of style of or switch or whatever because that's just not going to vibe, or that's going to potentially cause other issues elsewhere?
Not really. We have quite a small house. So, we don't really have a lot of that, So that's not really a problem. The onus is on me as the person who is building all these things to make it as intuitive as possible. Like, it makes sense. That's why design is a big part of it for me. Graphic design is a form of communication. So, and yeah, that's what makes something intuitive or not, you know? And I feel, you know, there's a saying in graphic design, if you've got like a toilet sign, right? Like, you say the gender of the toilet and then the picture of the gender at the top, you know, you say that's redundant, right? You're saying the same thing twice. So like, if you're a designer, you would go, okay, cool. Let me say this in one way because I don't need to absorb too much information. And it's the same thing with these products. Like, too much information or too complex a system is unnecessary, because these things are ancillary to our lives. They're not the main reason we do these things. I've seen other guys, they're like, we'll put NFC tags when they take their bins out to remind them later to bring the bin in. It's like I don't do that kind of stuff because it's this extra layer of complexity to my existing life, which doesn't need to happen. Sure. But the things that do exist in this life that we have to do, if I can streamline as many of these things as possible, I will do that, you know? And I think that's where the actual value of having a smart home comes in, because you unlock the ability to make your life easier. But then there's this other tier of things that are better and interesting. Like, today I took a nap with my daughter and I had put food in the oven, and I've got a smart switch on my board, my electrical DB board. I don't know if you guys call it a DB board.
Switchboard, yeah.
Yeah, your switchboard, yeah, just for the stove. So I'm able to either put a timer and shut down my stove or the oven with that, right, or I can just switch it off manually. Just go, like, I don't have to get up. My daughter's like sleeping on my chest. I don't have to like wake her up to go make sure the food doesn't burn. I can just whip up my phone and do it. So that layer, that's cool, but I wouldn't have initially sought out that. Like, the to put that, that was a safety feature that we put in, to put that switch in. But now there's another tier of value that you get out of having those things, which make your life better. You discover as you build your smart home, you go like, oh yeah, I could just do it like that. You know? And I think that's how I go about building a smart home. Is that the question you asked?
Yeah. Like, and I guess, well, I mean, there's various ways, I guess, because there's always different ways to skin a cat, right? And I just wanted to know, from your perspective, is, you know, having someone on the spectrum in your house, if you've had to do anything different than perhaps you would have wanted to originally.
It's actually helped me, because I wanted to do everything. With somebody with ADHD, I just wanted to make everything smart.
Sure.
But like, it would have just been, right? It would have just been a doom box of like things that don't work or half work, as you were saying, like 50% of the time the switch will work. So I've had to, like, she's kind of put me to task, like as kind of like a manager, like a line manager in a business. Because like there's a certain standard that that the smart home has to be kept up to, and it's also it's informed what I do and also saved me time, because I could dabble on this stuff for forever, right? Like we like to tinker, but like sometimes that's going to take away from the valuable parts of life, spending time with your family, you know, it pulls you away from things that actually matter. So in order for smart home stuff to matter, they can't just entertain your or my, like my desire to tinker. They've got to value the people around me. And it's got to add value to this home. And that's been like my, you know, my water stick for building the smart home is going, okay, cool. Everything I integrate, there's some things I tinker with, but everything I integrate and expose needs to be valuable to the members of this household. With that metric in my head, it stopped me from like going crazy and making it like weird scripts and scenes that don't make sense. Look at this line. It's like a rainbow now or whatever the case is. Cause I can, you know?
Well, and that's the thing, right? You can take it as far as you want, right? And sometimes and we see it all the time, right? Where it's like sometimes you take it so far that when something breaks, you have no clue where it's, because it's just so complicated. You have no clue where it actually broke or where what happened or things.
Yeah, like troubleshooting it becomes a mission. You have to go check is it the integration? Is it my YAML? Is it the product? You know, like you've got to do the whole thing, and it becomes a mission. And again, it's you kind of want to set it up and leave it, especially something like smart locks for a house. It's something you don't want to revisit, like ideally, and you want to set that up and I don't want to see it again. Like it's there for a purpose. But we were joking the other day, if I like pass away, Jess is just going to rip out all the smart stuff and retrofit everything. She's like, I'm not going to the YAML, I can't be bothered. but yeah
that's fair. All right. Anything else you wanted to chat about?
Maybe to cap this, it's just like, I'm so grateful again for Home Assistant in general. I don't think people understand, if you haven't tried it, I don't think you understand the power of it. And I just can't believe this piece of software is available for free. I can't believe that we are able to, it reminds me of OBS, which is like the streaming software. Like they put that out and made it free. I can't believe that software is free. It's so useful. And I can't believe that Home Assistant is free. And like it's unlocked like a very, it's given my household like a sense of safety, security, like usefulness. It's helped my wife being on the spectrum. It's helped my job. We're like working with all these, you know, smart devices in the house. It's an ecosystem which is extremely undervalued. And I think it's undervalued because people go, oh, it's scary and it's daunting. It's not as scary and daunting as you think it is. Yeah. And the moment you start to tinker, it's hard not to stop. I'm just really, really, really grateful to everybody that has built Home Assistant, the Nabucasa team, and also like everybody that spends their time and energy building like integrations for products across the board. I mean, everybody on those forums, I'm just so in awe and grateful for the work that you do.
Yeah, and the community is truly, truly awesome. And there's, to your point, there's so many people that have benefited from it, and there's so many people that contribute to it too, so. And we say this all the time, and it's like it's the community is truly amazing. So
yeah, no, it really, really is. Like it's hard to find in the new internet where all these private companies own all these like these conglomerates and try to like the shitification of everything. It's awesome that Home Assistant has prevented that shitification from happening in future by the recent events,
Open Home Foundation, and
Open Home Foundation, like yeah. And it's going to sit. And I think live streaming, so just to spin around, video game live streaming is in a place where it is because of software like OBS. I don't think it would be anywhere where it is without this open source thing. And I think the future of smart homes is going to be built in Home Assistant as the cornerstone. It's going to lead the discussion in very much the same way we like Elgato build a lot of products. You have to, for live streaming, we have to think about OBS. Smart home like products that are coming out will have to consider Home Assistant more and more, the more people that adopt it, and the more people are demanding that it is free, it is secure, it's easy to use.
Yeah.
And because of that, it's just going to grow exponentially.
We're already seeing that happening, right? Like we're seeing that with Z-Wave Alliance now. They are starting to use Home Assistant to test their stuff. Matter, I think, is like, Home Assistant is pretty much leading Matter, right, at the moment, I believe. A lot of, you know, companies are using Home Assistant to test that their new products on Matter are up to spec, you know.
You got Apple and Google to kneel before you, you know what I mean?
pretty much, right? Yeah. Sort of, but yeah, close enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what an achievement, right?
It's more than the EU can do, you know what I mean?
But it's true though, right? Like you've got this manufacturer that's like, hey, we want to build this thing. We want to make sure that it's successful. And the mark that they use it against is Home Assistant, right? Especially specifically with Matter, right? There are quite a few companies that are starting to use that as their test. But and it's nice too, because it's free for them too, right? So it's not like from a company perspective, right? They're being fiscally responsible. They're not like, you're using this free tool that you can just spin up, spin down, do whatever you want, and spin up how many ever instances for your testing and stuff. You know, whereas in the old days, yeah, that hundreds of thousands.
I think we're seeing something in technology now, which is interesting, because we're like, there was that stage where everybody was pushing into the cloud, right? Like it was, and then what companies discovered was that the cloud's actually expensive. Like people capitalized on big corporations moving their services to the cloud. And then that comes over to us as customers, right? That pressure is on us till you got like 100 subscriptions every month for like, there's a OneDrive subscription, there's a Google, Apple subscription for you, whatever. It's so frustrating. So I think people are going like, you know what, like, let's just dumb that down a bit. It's expensive for us as a corporation. You guys can have a lot of that stuff happen locally. And we're seeing it now with AI, where everyone's like, it's happening on the chip, guys. And also they're saying that as like, it's a big feature. Like it used to happen on the chip before that, you know, that's where it used to happen. Yes. But like we were sold this vision of the cloud and things happening on the cloud, which is necessary for certain circumstances. But AI being processed on the chipset will just motivate me to have a better chipset, and then I will take that load, and it's more secure. It's a happier thing. I guarantee it. I've got the physical device with me, you know. The cloud and when things are cloud dependent, I want to beat my head against the wall.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's what these companies are realizing that, and I think it's the same thing with like services, you know, like Z-Wave. It's like, and Matter. It's like, you know what? Like we spent all this energy and resources building all our own proprietary bullshit, which like we're trying to get all these like manufacturers to adopt, and that no one's adopting it. And like there's this existing network that we can just tap. Let's just do that. You know, and then it saves their money. It saves us money. It's great.
Yeah, and there's it and it's different when it's especially for us as consumers, right? And it's like, because to your point, Grant, it's like, you've got this subscription, you've got that subscription, you've got a third one, a fourth one, a fifth one, sixth one, whatever. Corporately, it's different because what you're paying for is you're like, hey, I'm paying for an SLA. I'm paying for all of this stuff. I'm paying for you to make sure your service stays up. If not, you somehow compensate me back, whether it's services, whether it's monetary, whatever that is. Consumers don't have that, right? So so that what's happened is we've taken this concept that's typically business to business, right? Like, you work for whatever company and you are paying Microsoft to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to host my services here. And if you have any downtime, or if you take down your service or you do whatever, you're expected to give me this much notice. You're expected to, or if it's unexpected downtime, whatever it is, you will financially compensate me or compensate me in whatever other way, right? Whatever's agreed upon. But as consumers, you don't have any of that. Right. And as consumers, it's like, because you are, you know, you're Phil, you're Grant, you're Rohan. They don't care about Grant, Phil, or Rohan. They care about their large corporate customers, right? Which is, but, you know, as a consumer at the end of the day, that kind of kills you there too, right? So, well, I mean, that's the other side of this, right? Cloud is, especially for a consumer, can sometimes
be frustrating.
Very much so. And it's like we end up paying for that stuff anyway. So like, it's why not pay to have like a Synology server at your house or a Raspberry Pi at your house, and then it's going to keep your house running for the foreseeable future, you know, and then that cost is way lower. And then all those other services that were rented by services to businesses that were rented out to other businesses that are now like on our chest. And that's why companies like Twitter are struggling as well, because they, you know, like they have to maintain the stuff, costs money. You can't just set it up for free, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Well, Grant, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. If it wasn't people like you, where was I? If it wasn't people like you, we wouldn't have a podcast. So thank you for taking time to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah. You guys are awesome. And thanks for an awesome podcast. Thanks to the community. You guys kick ass.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Right, cheers.
If you want to share your home assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant Podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on hasspodcast.io.
Just got a free coffee with my EarnIFI points.
Your what?
The points I get with the new EarnIFI app from BP and Amoco. I got 250 for signing up and more every time I fill up or buy anything in the C-store.
Oh, can you use points for fuel?
Of course.
And discounts and deals?
On anything.
Oh, like chips?
Mm-hmm.
Sodas?
You got it.
The actual slushy machine.
Only what's actually for sale. But you do get double the points for the first 90 days. Just go to EarnIFIRewards.com to download the app.
Available at participating locations only. App content is subject to change.